Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Shope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550.
Gonna be that in an hour, coming in my band, child shoes and my necktie.
I'd just like to thank the National Hockey League, the Sabres, and the Carolina Hurricanes, TNT, HBO, Max, any other affiliated corporations for a 6 o'clock Sabres game tonight. Thank you, Sabres. It's wonderful. Spectacular. My workday got cut by an hour. Pre-game at 5. Face-off at 6:07. There we are. That's that. Mike took a day off today.
Yeah, what a waste of a day for
him. That is bad asset management right there.
No,
terrible.
No kidding.
Terrible job. It was the only day he could really go do what he wanted to do. He's going to watch curling in Guelph. I'm not kidding.
Okay.
That's exactly what he's doing. Nate Geary is here for Mike for a couple hours from 3 to 5. So hurry up and call now because time's a-wasting. Sorry, I just turned into Chris Farley. 803-0550 is the phone number. And for real, like you call, hang out for a couple hours here. We'll have Sal Capaccio on at 4 o'clock to get the lowdown on everything that went down today at 1 Bills Drive as the Bills begin preparations for a massive divisional round matchup with the Baltimore Ravens. 6:30 Sunday evening will be game time. And our boy here rolled in the door, and I feel like it got cloudy as soon as you walked in. Let me ask you this. Mike and I were fooling around with this on Monday a little bit and maybe even a little bit yesterday. Are you tight? Do you get tight for these? Like, is this like anxiety about the Bills you're feeling?
Yeah.
Because like Mike and I we've been together for so long. We both referenced on Monday when the Sabres first got good, that first spring of 06. And like maybe before they bludgeoned Philly, it was like, oh, this maybe it could be a series, you know?
Yeah.
And we were doing the show, and like you could feel like there was this, we were snapping at each other. It was edgy, and it was because we were tight. We were full of anxiety. I don't know. I don't feel a ton of anxiety here about this. It's not saying like I'm assuming the Bills are going to cruise or anything. I had more anxiety last week, even though I was sure the Bills would win, because where I get anxiety from about my sports teams is when they're supposed to win and there's a realistic chance that they won't. And there was a realistic chance that Denver could have pulled an upset. I mean, it's a football game, right? But I was confident that wouldn't happen. But all the same, the game starts, and it's 7-0, and like, you can't lose this game. I don't want to say the Bills can lose on Sunday, but like in an objective, open-minded world, there should be no shame in losing to the Baltimore Ravens, just as there should be no shame for the Ravens in losing to the Bills. Like, these are two great teams. These are two great quarterbacks, and somebody's
going to win.
Somebody's going to win, and somebody's going to go home and feel like they just can't get, you know, not only can they not get past the Mahomes mountain, but you still, like, you're tripping up in this round. I mean, that's more for the Bills than the Ravens. They at least got to the championship round last year by virtue of winning a divisional round game against Houston and then getting smacked around by Kansas City in the championship game. So, I don't know. I have more anxiety about games you absolutely should not lose than I do about a matchup. I mean, I'll have anxiety watching the game. I dearly want them to win. We're talking about going to New Orleans here, this show. If the Bills make it. So, like, I'm invested. Like, I really want that to happen. But I don't know. As you get further in and you're playing better teams, I don't know. I get less freaked out about it because, again, I know it'll sound like the world is burning endlessly if they don't win this game. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I guess I'm telling you, I wouldn't have any trouble accepting a loss. It's Baltimore. It depends on what it looks like.
Sure.
Of course. But you feel you are, I can tell by the way you're looking at me.
Jeez.
You are tight.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I ask you?
Can I get you a beer or something?
Were you on air, would have been the last Bills Super Bowl?
No, I didn't I started fall of 95.
Okay. So maybe it's not a good point of reference, but I want to say that I think I probably feel the same way people felt when the Bills were going into that fourth straight Super Bowl.
See, let me just interject quickly that I was positive they were going to win
really?
That game. Yes.
You sick, sick puppy. Yeah. You're a sick puppy.
I know. I've always been this way.
Yeah, you're a sick puppy.
I just, nobody loses three of these in
a
row.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Uh-huh. You know, squirrel nuts. Uh-huh. You know, I love that.
Clock wrong. broken clock is right twice. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Come on.
That
really undoes everything I've already said today.
A little bit.
Sorry. Well, this is how it is. It's not me.
Here's, I guess, what I would say my general vibe has been since the Curtis Samuel touchdown Sunday. When it became, I think, very clear that this was going to be Bills, and it just feels. I guess what I'm nervous about. Well, I guess the nerves exist for two reasons. A, I sort of feel like the Raven, like how I felt about last week's game was that it was going to go two ways, and I always thought the Bills were going to win. That it was either going to be a really close game all the way to the end, or the Bills were going to blow them out. And I feel similarly just in the inverse of this game.
And it was kind of both of those games for a little while.
A little while it was both.
Right.
Is that this game feels like the Bills could get blown out or that they're going to win a very close game. And the idea or the fear of being blown out, I guess part of this goes to, I think almost universally and regardless of who wins Sunday in this game, no other game, unless Houston upsets Kansas City, which I'm not predicting, that almost every talk show on Monday morning will be about the loser of this game. And probably the entire week, the conversation won't turn over to who won the game until the AFC Championship game. And then it will be, okay, can this guy now beat Mahomes, because neither of them have beaten Mahomes when it matters. So for me, the anxiety exists from being on the end, being the guy. I don't want the conversation again to be that the coach and that just inevitably the talking points, what will they be, Bulldog? They will be, they failed Josh Allen. They're wasting Josh Allen's career. They got to fire the coach, you know, and it's all, it's the fragility of talking about that 3.5 hours will dictate whether or not I'm prepping for the draft or talking about can they beat Mahomes in Arrowhead. And the fragile line that exists there is so concerning to me in that that next week will be here, us talking about Bills, Chiefs, could you ask for anything better? And the opposite of that, which will be no one will be talking about the Bills Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. It will be Lamar freezes in the big spots, can't get over the hump. That's what the conversation will be. Is he going to win an MVP even though Josh Allen just beat him? And he can't possibly win three MVPs without really ever winning a big game. Like that's what it'll be. And if the Bills lose, it will be that, again, the Sean McDermott talking point, but it'll also all go unfairly to Allen can't get it done. And that to me is just not a conversation that I have or want to be a part of in any capacity.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I'm always thinking about the job in all of this.
That's what you do, I think.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's what we do for a living. It's entirely what I do for a living. You dabble. but still, no, I mean, I totally get that. That's why I think like the pressure points in this game, like the key men in this game, who are the key men? The quarterbacks and the coaches are the key men in this game. Harbaugh, to me, like, he won a Super Bowl. I know it's a long time ago now, but I still feel like he's, no matter what happens, he's fine. I feel like Lamar is more in the crosshairs with Ravens fans than the coaches. That's a guess for me. And nationally, if Lamar can't get it done, his playoff track record is not very good.
It's actually very average, or worse than that.
He's had some really bad games in the playoffs. He had a couple spectacular ones, but whereas Allen is like almost, you know, he's almost untouchable. I mean, the Bengal game wasn't very good, but mostly his playoff performance has been great. McDermott is, if you had to rank these four dudes and who's wearing
the most pressure
into this game, it's McDermott, and I don't even think it's close. As I'm talking about it, I don't even think it's that interesting a conversation or a point to make
because it's so obvious.
Yeah. Like he is in, like, at least in the world you're talking about, the conversation world. Like, you know, in reality, I don't think Sean McDermott is up against any kind of a wall with the organization, right? And that will only serve to frustrate the fans if we end up in that conversation. Because
it'll be very similar to the Tomlin conversation, unfairly, by the way. Unfairly. There will be the same conversation the media is having this week about Mike Tomlin will be pointing directly towards Sean McDermott.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I get this too. I get this weird vibe about how each quarterback is looked at. And like every fan base wants their guy to be the martyr. Everyone's like, Lamar, the media, the golden boys, Josh Allen, everybody talks when the media has voted him twice as the MVP and the first team all pro. Mm-hmm. No one is saying, to me anyways, I don't think either quarterback is talked negatively about in the media. I don't think either one is. But each fan base really wants the other to know that their quarterback is the underdog and is the guy that nobody respects because of what their pre-draft analyses were.
As insane as this may sound, because Jackson has gotten the hardware.
Yes.
I think it's very hard for guys, no matter how long they play, to definitively change narratives about them. Like, there are Ravens fans out there, I'm positive, there are Ravens fans out there that think Lamar is an excellent runner, but can't throw from the pocket.
Mm.
Because Bill Polian said he should become a tight end or something, or whatever he said before the draft. Like, that stuff I think has stuck to Lamar in a way. Like, I know what you're saying about the fan. You're in the streets. I ignore that.
Yeah.
Like, I never have. I don't think it's not helpful to me to do my job. Like, to think about what some whack job is saying to me on social media. Not that everyone there that I communicate with sometimes are whack jobs, but plenty of people are. So, like, I just don't even go in. Like, in a back and forth kind of way. But I do think Jackson has had more of a hard time getting the respect, even though he's got the MVPs, because he hasn't won in the playoffs in a big spot. And the original narrative on him, I think, still sticks to him in some way. That's why I think Ravens fans, like the fan bases are very similar. We have the same sort of Patrick Mahomes Chiefs problem.
Sure.
But here it's the coach. There, I think it's the QB.
So I don't know. I don't necessarily disagree. But I do think that one of these quarterbacks who has had I'll say this, is generally speaking with Lamar, he's got the hardware and doesn't have the playoff performances to back it up. Josh Allen doesn't have the hardware, but has the playoff performances to back it up. And yet, he was voted most overrated player in the league by players. So, what it makes this conversation, and maybe this is more so bringing back the MVP conversation and the debate between it, but it's become so much of these two guys being pitted against each other, and neither of them would tell you that they feel they need to be defended. As much as Josh Allen definitely cares that his peers believe he's overrated, I don't think he goes and says, man, it feels really good that the fans are backing me up on Twitter to the Ravens fans.
Of course not.
I don't think that. But I do genuinely believe that they use and hear and feel I believe the Bills feel disrespected in the All-Pro and Pro Bowl conversation.
Sure, sure.
They
probably should.
I think they should too. And it just becomes this yeah, but conversation. Well, you can't say Josh doesn't have any help, but then also complain about, you know, not having any All-Pro players. And I had a tweet that got taken way out of context about Khalil Shakir that, you know, oh, Bill, he doesn't have any help. He's not even a 1,000-yard receiver. He's a very good player right. And has been elevated
right.
Because he has an unbelievable quarterback
yeah.
who, and like, that is not a knock on Shakir. I am a huge Shakir fan. I literally tweeted during the game, I don't think I've ever seen a receiver like him. He is so unique in his skill set. He had 40 career catches coming into the season, doubled it, and then nearly had 1,000 yards. And like, it's this conversation to me is this game has been talked about for 6 weeks, and yep. I'm ready for it to be over with because I feel like Kansas City is laughing that you guys, it's the divisional round. And everyone's treating it like the damn Super Bowl. That's why I don't feel good about it for a lot of reasons. Because mostly, both of these teams, whoever wins, it very well might not matter a week later.
Well, yeah.
Because if either of these teams lose to Kansas City next week, no one's going to be talking about the game of the year.
Right.
No one's going to talk about it.
Right. It becomes a footnote.
It becomes barely.
Right. Unless the winner goes on to the Super Bowl at least.
It won't matter.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I saw somebody make this little chart on Twitter, and I was like, man, it's a great point. The conundrum between these three teams is the Bills, bad matchup for Kansas City. Kansas City's a bad matchup for the Ravens, and the Ravens are a bad matchup for the Bills. It's a big circle. It's like time is a flat circle, as Matthew McConaughey once famously said in True Detective. And it's just, it's weird, and I think if you asked the Chiefs would rather play the Ravens, and I think if you asked the yeah. Ravens, they would rather play the Bills, and if you asked the Bills, they would rather play Kansas Chiefs. City.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah.
It's what I hate about this game, and what I hate largely about the new playoff format, is the Bills have gotten the short stick every single year in this playoff format.
Since they went to one bye.
Yes.
Yeah.
They've sure. gotten the two seed, what, three sure. out of five?
I think that's right.
Okay. And that three out, none of the lower seeds win ever in the AFC. You basically, and the conversation this week is.
Kansas City was the three last year.
yeah, that's a good point. Jeez.
Just saying. Sorry, I didn't mean to ruin your day.
I mean five, six, seven seeds. Sure. They're not winning in the wild card rounds. They're just not. In the NFC, it's kind of happened, but it's not happening in the AFC. If you don't have Mahomes, Burrow, Lamar, or Allen, you don't have a shot in hell.
Yeah.
You just don't. And There's so many. It's a giant inverse pyramid, and it's at the top what I really hate, but at the bottom is like as much as I'm looking forward to this game, I can't wait until 9:15 ish. Or whenever it'll be over.
I can't decide whether you needed to be here today or that this was a terrible idea.
I think I might have needed to be here.
There's two concurrent thoughts I've got running here, and they're very divergent, theoretically. But it sounds like you got some stuff to work out.
Yeah. Like, I don't have therapy this week, unfortunately.
Why is McDermott the pressure point here? Well, obviously, right?
13 seconds.
You've got...
That's it.
Well, sure.
That's
it all begins there, but you've got to amp it up. You've got this matchup with this. They're unlike any other team, maybe in the history of football, with the quality of the running of the quarterback and the throwing of the quarterback and the running back who's like
a Hall of Famer. First ballot.
It's an all time great running back. So you've got this unique dynamic. And add into it, the Bills' primary form of defense is nickel, which is, where McDermott is squarely in it here is he's being looked at to do something, right? You and Bobby Babbage better come up with a good plan here.
And I think...
And whatever that is, it better work. Because if it doesn't, dude.
Why have a defensive coach if you keep failing because of your defense? I think is the pressure point.
Yeah.
And it's 13 seconds, and it's watching them try to defend how they defended they defended the Bengals 2 years ago. It was last year. Okay, it was injuries. Maybe you get a pass. But I want to say that I've had my ebbs and flows with McDermott. Is after 13 seconds, I thought he wasn't getting enough blame. And largely it was because of how new their relevance was. And it was very clear Josh was unbelievable. They'll be back.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gotten to the divisional round. But they keep hitting their head here. And largely it's because of their defense. And how much assets... Historically, this GM has put into their defense first and second round picks, same position in the same back to back rounds in the same year, right? And
free agency, too.
Free agency,
Miller, obviously.
Yes. To me, it is again, the point doesn't need to be hammered home, but it is McDermott. It's not close. I do think Harbaugh has some pressure because his quarterback is two MVPs and potentially a third. And they aren't getting it done.
And if they don't get somewhere, I can hear that because Lamar is obviously not doing anything.
And he's one of the longest tenured coaches in the league.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be right.
And you might start hearing people, the same conversations people have had here in Buffalo about Brian Daboll, now about Joe Brady, because the Joe Brady conversation is going to rear up big time if they lose and the Bills offensively do really well. If they lose 35, 34, if they lose.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how.
Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who's 42-38? People are going to say, Joe Brady's going to walk out this door the same way Brian Daboll did. We need an offensive coach. That's a conversation that's going to happen. And Todd Monken is getting the best version of Lamar Jackson that you could possibly have. And he's getting interviews right now. And that his prestige is only going to increase if Lamar keeps having these unbelievable offensive seasons. And they're going to say, this guy's going to walk out the door unless you make him the head coach. Both of these franchises are so similar in the structure, the consistency, the what's the big word that everyone can, the continuity, right? Like they have very similar structures. And they also have very similar pressures.
Yeah.
And who that pressure is on because of how good the quarterback is. And I said, you know, of the four quarterbacks in the AFC, two have been to a Super Bowl. These two haven't.
803-0550 is the phone number. You want to get in and it's like, you know, smack Nate around.
I'm used to it.
Sometimes a dude needs to get punched.
Yeah, right.
Maybe you just need a
punchable face, I've been told.
You just need to eat one. Yeah. Maybe. Maybe it'll be me.
It might be.
I don't know.
It seems like you have a key grip, though, so I'm not sure.
Short show today, though. Maybe we won't get there. Anyway.
If we had four full hours, a different story.
803-0550 is the number. You want to get in on this. We're going to just chop it all up here. What McDermott and Babich will come up with, should come up with on defense. I want to be very careful about that, but I'm certainly open to ideas. It's not that complicated. A linebacker instead of Taron Johnson. Anyway, we'll get into all that as we roll here. Sal again at 4 o'clock to get us the rundown and everything that went down at One Bills Drive today. Injury report, walkthrough practice, etc., etc. By now, I think you know the drill. We're into week 19. Week 20 of the football season, as it turns out, and the Bills and Ravens are, of course, still standing. Sabres will barge in here at 5. Paul Hamilton will join me for pregame at 5. Puck drop a little after 6 for the Sabres and Hurricanes. Special start time, so make a note if you're used to rushing down there at 7 o'clock. You got to be there at 6 for tonight's game between Carolina and Buffalo. We'll hit a timeout here and hopefully start picking them up and putting them down from you on the other side at 803-0550. Nate Geary's in for Mike today. I am the Bulldog, and this is WGR.
Offensively, in this case, the run game specifically, Ryan, to your question, they do a tremendous job. I mean, they move people off the line of scrimmage. They out-scheme people. I think Coach Monken is one of the best out there in what they do in their offense and the run game in particular. And then you've got to be able to tackle Derrick Henry. So they do a really good job.
Tackle Derrick Henry. It's not going to be a problem. It'll be cold. He's basically made of glass. Don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. I didn't mean any of that. Well, glad to have you with us here.
I'll tell you this.
I'm just trying to turn Nate around. He seems out of sorts.
Yeah, I've played in cold games before. I've added some curvature to my body since I was playing football, but you know, I was like describe myself as wiry when I was wiry.
getting run over in the cold, first of all, I do want to point out that early in my football career, I had two nicknames. I played quarterback growing up, so Sunshine was one of them. I had long hair. The other one was Speed Bump.
Speed Bump?
Speed Bump.
That doesn't seem like a compliment.
No, but like Speed Bumps, they get the job done, but you run over them in the process. Mm. But they go down.
I see.
But yeah, I especially in those cold games, being a speed bump is not
sure.
Like, hey, I got the job done. I got him down. It didn't feel good in the process.
Yeah, running like, you know, 15 miles an hour chest. at a 240-pound, 6'3" man in
pads. I can't imagine
who's running also at probably that speed or maybe a little more. And it doesn't sound like.
And fun. I want to say, you know, like the conversation this week was, I think it was Dominic Foxworth on ESPN was talking about just like. The Bills are built, they're a small defense. Their linebackers are 20 pounds less than Derrick Henry. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so does that make them like 250? I was like, we are awfully close in weight. Bills linebackers and I.
That's not ideal.
No, it's not.
The builds are markedly
very different kinds of weight.
803-0550 is the number. It's all full up. We got to get rolling. 803-0550. He's Nate Geary, by the way, in for Mike today. Mike will be back for tomorrow's show. I am, as always, Howard Simon. Aiden is up first. Hi, Aiden. Thanks for calling. You're on the air here on WGR.
Hey, guys. So I just wanted to talk about that pressure you guys were bringing up about McDermott. And I really think that he's been feeling it this year. You know, I think that he's been really aggressive. I think he's been making a lot of the right decisions. I don't remember the statistic exactly, but it was, I think his analytical decisions or decisions that like need an analytics, they've been almost perfect this year, if not close. I know he's in the 90%. And I just feel like a real confidence with him going into this playoff. I know the 13 seconds happened. Mm-hmm. I know in previous years with the Bengals, there were some issues with the defense, but this year, I don't know, maybe you guys have some more commentary on it, but I just feel super confident in his play calling and his ability to make the right decisions in the right time.
Well, I think that's all correct. I mean, there was a chart that made the rounds after the regular season ended about maybe it was win percentage added by those kinds of decisions, and McDermott was at the top of it. He's been excellent at that stuff. The thing is that it only gets talked about when he doesn't. If he doesn't do it, it doesn't go for it on a fourth down. If he goes to fourth down and they make it, it wasn't all that daring. We don't even remember the scenario that was presented. It's the ones that fail that end up getting focused on. This is kind of how we do it. But his play calling, how they play, like that is, I feel like if I were to try to put what I hear the most, and this is, does not mean this is the majority of the fan base, but what I hear most consistently about McDermott is the style that they play. Soft coverage, sitting back. What, it's third and six. Why are they 8 yards off? That kind of stuff. Like you say it, I've said it. Everyone says it. And it ignores the excellent results that they've had year over year over year over year. And I know saying that ignores what has happened in the playoffs because they have been – They've had some bad days in the playoffs. There's no question, but I struggle with you should junk how you play defensively because you lost to the Bengals and the Chiefs in the playoffs. I still think there's room for like their style of defense, his style of defense, his coaching. I think gets blown out by 13 seconds. It just gets. Of course, it's got to be flawed. It's a problem. And I just struggle with that because I think it doesn't give any credit to these excellent seasons they've had year over year. So
I do think, to the caller's point, I don't actually disagree that maybe more so than ever, McDermott has acknowledged the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to maybe point to that I don't think he's necessarily scared or running from it. And I do think that's an important point when you talk about McDermott. Mm-hmm. Or any coach that's in a situation that he's in, which is I think the longer it takes and the more times the Bills fall short, even though they have these great seasons, like I would say this is the one fan base you could look to say, Bills fans, especially with the 17-year playoff drought, the first 3 or 4 years it was, man, it's just I'm glad we're back having meaningful football in December and, you know, winning wild card rounds. That, it's already begun, but it will become, okay, this is great. It's hard for me to continue to be excited about 13-win seasons and division winners when you keep losing in the second round. That's there. That exists. I know that the standard everywhere should be you win a Super Bowl. But for the first 3 years, it was just exciting to be back, to just be there, to get to an AFC championship game in his third year and to not be back since his fourth year. Was his fourth year?
Yeah, 17, 18, 19, 20.
Yeah, I'm not a numbers guy. Never claimed to be. You, on the other hand, very much are. So, where I come in this is, you know, if they hit their head again in the divisional round and lose this week, and the conversation's going to be until they can get past this, even if it's just to an AFC championship game, there is that pressure. I just don't know that he's as scared's the wrong word.
No,
you're
tripping a good wire for me, I think. We'll see if I can get this out and have it make sense. If your job is to lead people through whatever it is, right, you're the coach of the team, you got to lead them, right? You're leading them. You're leading them into the game. You're trying to help them deal with the pressure themselves. It's possible it takes you a while to get comfortable with it yourself and know how to deal with it yourself, let alone show them. And I think what I might sense now, all this conversation about like Tyler Dunn's piece and Joe Biscaglia's piece about McDermott, this different McDermott within the room, not just on the sideline going for it on fourth downs, but just how he's dealing with the players and the day to day. It might just be that he got to a different place and I don't say understands it better, but welcomes it. It's a part of it. It's there. You got to stare at it and I think wrap your arms around it, because if you treat it as an adversary, the pressure, it's going to eat you up.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that McDermott just figured that out, but it makes sense to me logically that it could be a process and each misstep has gotten him closer. And the criticism that he took last year, you know, three quarters of the way through the season, the Tyler Dunn piece, all of it, may have opened his mind to, what do I have to do to be different? What do I have to do to be better? I think he's always thinking about being better, but maybe he looked at it from another angle.
Yeah.
I hope that's right, because I feel like it's their time. Which I know is not an X's and O's point. It's not a thing to point to say like this. You know, somebody call Vegas and tell them to adjust the point spread, because you know it being somebody's time is simply a guy on the radio saying it feels like their time, but it does to me. Kansas City is gettable this year. I think the Ravens do provide a very unique and, in certain ways, yes, terrifying and certainly not advantageous matchup. But I don't think they're some super team. I mean, it's 2025. I'm going to be worried about a running back coming in here and running over me on the way to the Super Bowl? Come on. Like, it's going to be Jackson and Allen. And yes, Henry plays a part in that. I don't know. I'm just struggling with being terrified of a running back, any running back.
Yeah.
You know? And so, I don't know, I've got my guys back, you know? I've got Bernard back, I've got Milano back, I've got Johnson back. We'll see how that works, you know, schematically, how much they use Dorian Williams or Taron Johnson and how they formulate that. But I don't know, man, I just don't feel threatened by this matchup, and I'm not. The chips will fall where they fall when it's over. I mean, whatever. I did this for 17 years in a row without a playoff. It's just not going to bother me if I have to talk about a postmortem of another playoff loss myself. Sean is next up on WGR. Hi, Sean. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Bulldog. Hey, Nate. This is Sean from the 100 Holes.
All right, Sean. What's up, buddy?
Not much. I'm not playing golf today. I am going to the Sabres game, though. But I was going to talk about Milano, Bernard, and Johnson, but, Bulldog, you were talking about McDermott, you know, the pressure and all the things he's learned. I think he has. I'm I'm not a fan. I'm not a, you know, I am not. But the 13 seconds, not to rehash that, but you have to, he learned from that because he's moved on. And he, you know, everybody brings it up, but I think he's moved on from that. And I think he processes stuff better. And that, and you know, and you even said it, how he said it with the Tyler Dunn, how he talked to them. So I feel like you made a great point there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. 100 holes.
Thinking, yeah.
I got a caddy for you or Jer, yes, or maybe both of you this year.
Yeah,
I could. Gotta make that happen. Maybe take a day off and do it.
I could use it, yeah. And it's fun.
Sure. No, I would love it.
Yeah.
I'm watching the TGL.
Yeah. Oh, me too.
I don't. I'm not sure why, but
because we are both starving for golf is why.
This is a turn in my life that I don't think anyone who knew me saw coming at all. But yeah, my wife walked in the room yesterday. Owen and I are watching the mm-hmm. you know, the simulator golf, basically. She's like, she stood there for a minute. She's like, "What are you watching?" And I said, "We're watching fake golf." And she said,
"Okay.
Yeah?" I'm like, "It's for work." Yeah.
The guys
and
that you
and
are...
Because Owen's doing this video content production thing in the morning. He's like, "Me too."
Yeah.
I'm like, shut up!
The guys of "this is for work" is probably the one enviable thing of this job. Anybody that envies being in this position full-time is just that when the wife says, "What are you doing?" I'm preparing.
It's for work.
I'm preparing.
Sorry. Yeah, you know... I don't punch in, but I mean, I'm working.
Right.
803-0550 is the number. We'll squeeze in a few more calls here in the next segment, and then Sal Capaccio will join us at the top of the hour. Nate Geary's in for Mike. I am the Bulldog. Bills and Ravens on Sunday at 6:30. I mean, come on. This is WG. Run along here on a Wednesday. Mike Schoep has the day off. Nate Geary is sitting in for him. Sal Capaccio coming up in about 15 minutes. Paul Hamilton at 5 with Sabres pregame. What? Yeah, Steve Foley Law pregame show rolls at 5 because puck drop is a little bit after 6 from KeyBank Center tonight between the Sabres and the Hurricanes. Radio only for your beloved Dan and Rob as the game is a TNT Max exclusive. So adjust your plans accordingly. 803-0550 again is the number. Mo is first up this segment. Hi, Mo. Thank you for calling. You're on the air here on WGR.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to talk about a couple of things I saw when I was watching the Ravens game. And from what I see, when 43 is in the game, Justice Hill, Lamar's keeping it. He likes to have Justice Hill. He likes to fake it to Justice Hill, either go out for passes or take it himself. When Derek's in the game, he's giving it to Derek most of the time. You know, when I watch the Steelers, they quit on Tomlin. You can't compare that game to the Bills.
They did.
You know,
quit.
T.J. Watt's coming downhill, eyes just totally down. Keep your eyes up. Got to look up. And we've had multiple games against Derrick Henry where he's been held under 100 rushing yards. Doesn't scare me. You know, I'm seeing a 31-14 game, 31-10 game Bills. And that's all I wanted to say. Shout out to my dad in Buffalo. Thanks.
All right, Mo. Appreciate the optimism. Mo's got the Mo. I don't know about a big one-sided win, but I'm not shaking about this matchup. Yes, the running back terrorized the Bills in week 4, but I did not have my guys. And the Bills have had ample time to be getting prepared for this. It's part of the reason McDermott is so in the center of everything here going into this game, because his defense is going to be put to a test here. And I don't know, man. I don't find it hard to get optimistic for that. Going into that week 4 matchup, wasn't it very popular and also correct to say that the Bills under McDermott had done a very good job on Lamar Jackson and the Ravens? Now, I know this was the first time with Derrick Henry there, so okay, game changer. But without the guys that were missing, Bernard, Milano, Taron Johnson, I'm just not as shook about it. Mm. I'm more worried about Lamar Jackson than I am Derrick Henry. Really, I mean, I think Lamar Jackson is great. If I'm going to be part of the reason I'm worried about going crazy with linebackers and trying to concoct ways to bottle up Derrick Henry is that I think the ground floor principle of the Bills defensively has been, you want to run it, go ahead and run it. We're going to let you run it. We're going to take away this stuff and wait for you to throw the ball to us or drop it or take a penalty or whatever, and then we're going to make you punt, and then we're going to get our offense on the field. And so changing in week 20 really worries me. Like, whether they'll be buttoned up doing what they want to do, if indeed they make – so I'm not saying you shouldn't counteract Patrick Ricard, a sixth offensive lineman, and Derrick Henry on the field. You've got seven 300-pound people coming downhill to try to block you. Like, I admit, that's a challenge. It's unique. You want to be prepared for that. But I think if they get too far out of their comfort zone, that's where I would get really worried about this game. Because I think if I'm so worried about stopping Derrick Henry that I forget about what Lamar can do as a passer, you know, not just in the dropback game, but running around. I mean, I think that worries me more. So, anyway, that's just a thought. Real quick, let's get Greg in next. Hi, Greg. Thanks for calling. You're on WGR.
Hey, I totally agree with you in regard to McDermott and his style of defense. I think the thing you have to do here is you have to get ahead and try to stay ahead. But I think there's some advantage to be gained. You know, Bill Belichick, he told you, you know, take away their strength, make them play left-handed. And when they bring those big people on the field, you know, we have to counteract that. And I think a personnel grouping with Milano, Bernard, and Dorian Williams out there would help that. And I think that, you know, you would allow us to better address that situation, but also to bring in Cole Bishop to supplement the run. Let Dorian Williams spy Lamar Jackson in those situations. Milano and Bernard are better
coverage
readers of pass, yep, more experience.
Yep.
And go ahead and play your play action. It's probably going to be two tight ends, so you're not really jeopardizing yourself that much. And I really think the substitution of Bishop for DeMar Hamlin is the epitome of McDermott's philosophy. He doesn't screw up much, but he doesn't make big plays, and then he's a liability in run defense. So I think I'd rather, you know, see us take our chances with those potential play action big plays than suffer, you know, death by 1,000 runs.
Right. All right. I appreciate that, Greg. I think if
I agree with Greg,
we'll see about a role for Bishop. I think if they were thinking about replacing DeMar Hamlin with Cole Bishop, it would have happened for the Denver game.
Yep.
I mean, when Hamlin missed time and then played the whole New England game, and then last week began, and McDermott said DeMar Hamlin's our safety, that told you all you need to know about what they think about the personnel there. Yeah, man, I think the chess match of this game, you know how, I mean, it's everything ramps up. And I love when we get to a place where we are right now, which is like we're just in it. You know, like week six, we are not talking about linebacker sub packages on this show. It just does not happen. But like, my mom is probably talking to my dad about Dorian Williams today. Like, I don't know, that 42. It's just a different vibe. Anyway, 803-0550 is the number. Sal Capaccio straight ahead here. We'll get the lowdown and everything that went down at One Bills Drive today from Sal, and then more of your calls after that as we continue. Nate Geary in for Mike. I'm the Bulldog. Thanks for listening.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Filling up right behind the Bills bench right now with their flags and their hey, 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 hey. Hey, 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 hey. Let's go Buffalo chant.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Indeed, let's go Buffalo. Welcome back in today. Mike Schoep has the day off. Nate Geary filling in for him. I am the Bulldog, and joining us right now on the Wester Hotline for his Wednesday weekly kickoff, the practice week visit, is our main man, Sal Capaccio. Good afternoon, Sal. How are things in your world?
Pretty good, pretty good. I was just online reading. I did not realize Doug Marrone was fired as offensive line coach of the Saints about 12 days ago. Oh. So that's what I've been doing, just kind of reading on that kind of thing.
Catching up, I guess, on some light reading about...
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, here's what happened. This is how our lives work, right? Like, I see a story. It says, Bill Belichick has hired a longtime SEC assistant to be his offensive line coach. And I thought about, oh, I think Marrone's been with Alabama as an assistant. But no, I think he went back to the NFL. Where is Doug Marrone these days? Type in Google. Doug Marrone. Oh, comes up. Doug Marrone dismissed the Saints offensive line coach a week ago. All right, there we go.
Right. I love when that happens, but at 3 in the morning. Like, not necessarily yes, like I, that I, I'm reading online, but like something pops into my head like, oh, yep. All right, I'm going to have to.
I got
to
roll over.
All right, I got to look it up.
I got to look it up.
I got to look it up. Damn it. Yeah. Anyway, what's the what's the good word out there? Mostly mm-hmm. good, right? I mean, the injury report has been pretty thin for a couple of weeks now, and that continues.
Yeah, for sure. So even more positive now here as I sit before going on with you guys as it was maybe 4 hours ago. And I say that because we knew that Ray Davis was still in the concussion protocol. What we learned after practice, though, not long ago, is that he actually practiced today in a limited capacity. So that's great. You know, I mean, he's actually progressing. I didn't know if he would or how he'd be listed, but mm-hmm. Sean just said, you know, he's still in the protocol. But he was officially limited at today's practice. That's a great sign, encouraging sign for him as he progresses through the protocol doing some football activities. It is only Wednesday, so that means he has a bit of a ramp up here to hopefully maybe, you know, clear the protocol and be ready for Sunday. And the only other player here was Alec Anderson. He was also limited with a calf injury, and he's an important player for sure, as you guys know, for what he does. But let's remember, he left the game a little before halftime, went in the locker room, and then he came back out and he finished and he played. And Sean called him day-to-day on Monday, so I'm not too concerned about that right now as we sit here.
Mm-hmm.
And the only other guy to think about would be Brandon Codrington, but he was a full participant today. I spoke with him after practice, and he said he actually thought that he was good enough to play as of like last Thursday, but really kind of the way that made it sound like, you know, they held him out, precaution, and, you know, it just to make sure everything was right, and they knew they had Khalil Shakir, obviously, that could return punts.
All right, so that's the lowdown on that. The matchup, Sal, I think I know we definitely touched on this already on Monday, but I love as the week is ramping up here, and you know the games are getting bigger and there's fewer teams left, and you're into the, I want to say minutia, but like, you know, talking about how often to play a linebacker instead of a nickelback and stuff mm-hmm. is not stuff that normally comes up on our shows outside of right. like visits with you when we'll ask you about different schematic things or whatever. I love how much the attention to detail even gets ramped up amongst casual fans, and just everybody's talking about how the Bills are going to deal with the Ravens defensively. I think that is the, to my ears anyway, the talking point around this game, much more than what the Bills are going to do to attack Baltimore.
No doubt about it. And I think we live in a time period where there's so much information accessible to us, and there's so many people who do a great job to disseminate that information that it really even ramps it up. If you want to understand and learn about nickel defense and dime defense and 4-3 and 3-4 and what it means and how they can go about it. I mean, there's so many great places. And of course, you know, we have the guys at Cover One and Eric and those guys who do a great job. And, you know, they've come on our show and they've broken it down. And there's a lot of other places. And Joe Marino does a good job every Wednesday when he joins the guys. And there's so many other people, whether it's Buffalo Bills based or anywhere else based, to kind of get that information. And there's certainly a lot out there. I think for the average fan, you know, a lot of that can get a little bit, you know, complicated. There's no doubt about it. And there's nothing wrong with that. And a lot of times you just kind of say it, but I think in this week it becomes really a lot more important if people want to understand what the conundrum is that the Bills are in and how they want to attack the Baltimore Ravens. And that conundrum is, as we brought up before in the program, they have to kind of choose here, I think, in a lot of ways, if they want to run three linebackers and have more beef and size on the field to combat Derrick Henry. But if they do that, that generally means taking Taron Johnson off the field to put that third linebacker on. Now, if someone says, well, you don't. Why can't it just be someone else? Take a safety off the field. You're not going to do that. I mean, because then you're giving up a lot more of you're much more susceptible then to throwing the football as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the second level of the defense. It's where that guy plays. And the Bills play nickel defense, a fifth defensive back, a nickel corner, more than any team in the league plays that position. And part of the reason is Taron Johnson is so damn good at it. He's an all-pro, so you don't want to take him off the field. But he's also smaller, and teams take advantage of him like that sometimes. So you're going to have to choose. Do you want him there? Do you want Dorian Williams there? And whichever one it is could be good for you, could wind up hurting you. You have to figure that out. My guess is they'll do it situationally in this game. It will be primarily still Taron Johnson because he's Taron Johnson, but they will probably go to a 4-3 more often than they normally do.
Sal, when you think about changing who you have been as a team for a specific game plan, do you like think about
especially not just who you are this year, but who the Bills have been since Sean McDermott has taken over. Like, how do you, I don't know, is threading the needle the right, you know, kind of phrase to use on this? Because I just think there's this healthy balance between this is a unique situation and a unique animal in the Baltimore Ravens. But like Bulldog was talking, it's like they've always been good with you. Hey, we're going to let you run the football. You're not going to beat us over the top. We're going to force field goals and punts. And that's how we're going to win. But I do think this is a unique animal. And I'm wondering how much you try to balance changing that whole mindset and philosophy for one opponent, knowing that playing the same way has kind of gotten you the success you've had over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I look, you know, there's two parts of this, Nate, where you're right in one sense, which is, you know, you get out of character a bit because it's not the normal personnel you put on the field. But let's be clear here. If they go 4-3, they're not changing the scheme of their defense, right? It's still the same scheme. The only difference is the person who's replacing Taron Johnson is a bigger person who you're guessing they're going to run the ball, so he's going to have to, you know, go tackle someone, as opposed to they're going to throw the ball, so he's going to have to cover. But his assignment kind of doesn't change based on if they still run a lot of the plays they're going to run. But you match up personnel in this. You know, if let's just say Zay Flowers is available, which we can talk about, and I don't think he will be, but let's just say Zay Flowers is available. You know, you're not going to have Dorian Williams necessarily running down the field with Zay Flowers. They're going to see him on the field, so Taron Johnson would be out there. That would be an example of you're going to match up personnel. Yeah. If the Ravens run two tight ends out there and a fullback, my guess is you're going to match that with three linebackers. If the Ravens run out there with Derrick Henry and one tight end and the rest wide receivers, my guess is you're going to see Taron Johnson. So the scheme of the defense doesn't change. It's really just the personnel. And it's not like they've never done this before. I actually specifically remember in the 2020 season, they did this a few times. The Rams were a game. Remember the Rams when they came back on the Bills in the second half?
Yes.
That game? That was a game where I remember they did this a little bit. I think the Seahawks that year at home, they did this a little bit. They've done it against the Ravens. In that playoff game, they did it. That year was a year where they did it a little bit more often. They've done it at times. So I don't think it's anything foreign to these guys. And the good part here about it too, guys, is this is why it's important to train your linebackers at all three spots. The Bills do that. The Bills do not just have, you're a Mike, you're a Will, you're a Sam. Weak, middle, strong. I talked to Eddie Ulofosio, who's a rookie, you know, before week 18 because he was going to play. And I said, how much have you played the Will linebacker? He goes, I've played all three positions. I get trained everywhere. That's what they do. So if you have to use Dorian Williams as a strong / Sam linebacker, he'll be fine there.
Yeah, because I wonder, I was waiting to ask you here, like, obviously the sub is Dorian Williams linebacker for Taron Johnson nickel corner. But what's the downside to that? The downside is they decide to hit me with a play action pass there and I don't have Taron Johnson to cover someone. And does that have to be Dorian Williams, or can Milano sort of take over Johnson's spot, so to speak? You know what I mean? And it's Williams is more freed up to, someone even earlier today suggested, we saw Milano spying Jackson, Bo Nix in the game last week. I wonder about Dorian Williams for that, so that Milano is freed up to do, you know, well, Milano things.
It's a great question. Both Milano and Dorian Williams have been used as spies over the last 2 years, obviously because they didn't even have Milano available. Actually, Dorian Williams was used as a spy late in the Chiefs game last year in the regular season. Go back to that Chiefs game late in the regular season last year when the Bills went to Kansas City and beat the Chiefs. Dorian Williams was used as a spy late in that game. Like, he was the one on Patrick Mahomes. And I think he did a pretty good job. Like, he's fast enough, certainly, to be able to do that. We know Matt Milano can. So, yeah, that's interesting. Like, if you want to do that, you're not taking Matt Milano off the field. It's not like Dorian's going to be on as a spy, right? But if Matt Milano's on the field and Dorian Williams, now you kind of have your choice. Somebody brought up two spies. It's possible, but you are leaving guys out and not bringing them in coverage. Let's remember, and I just went back and watched to the game from week 4. There was a touchdown in that game. I don't know if you guys remember this one. It was maybe the second touchdown they had. Justice Hill on a wheel route.
Yep.
Dorian Williams was flat-footed. Yep. I mean, he just didn't cover him, and he just got beat. And I agree, Bulldog. Like, if you're going to go 3, you might want to say, okay, now, but we want to make sure Matt Milano's the guy covering him in that situation, right? Not Dorian Williams. That as you guys know, I've said this many times this year, that is an issue that I think that comes up sometimes with Dorian Williams is his coverage ability. He's certainly fast enough, but I think sometimes he can get he can get a little bit lost in what he's trying to do because he wants to play so fast and where he wants to go that can work against him.
Sal Capaccio on the West Hur Hotline with us here as the Bills begin their week of preparation for the Baltimore Ravens. Who are we kidding? They've been preparing for the Ravens for 3 weeks probably. Sal, don't you think? Like they had to have a pretty decent idea that this would end up here.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, listen, before week 18, I asked Sean McDermott in his weekly press conference about how they're preparing for the possibility of three different opponents. We knew that could be obviously at that time the Broncos, the Dolphins, or the Bengals, and he gave a great answer which, you know, provided insight into how they operate, and that is that they're always kind of having advanced scouts and advanced staff looking at opponents down the road. Granted, in this case it was only three different ones, but they'd already done their work and they'd already had a foundation laid. So once it came to time for the Broncos, they knew that. Well, guess what? You know, once you go into the playoffs, you know there's only a couple of different teams you can play in the second round, right? So now you can start to do your work on the Ravens. Plus, I'm sure they had been doing a little bit of work here and there on the Ravens over the last whatever weeks because you know that you might wind up, you know, matching them in the playoffs. So there's no doubt about it. You know, I'm sure that they have, you know, you get here on it. Once you get here on a Wednesday, that's when everything's already, okay, we have the game plan. The coaches met. This is how we're going to present it to you guys.
So when you look at this Ravens offense, how important is Zay Flowers? It's hard, I guess, maybe if you're watching last week's game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, you might look at that and say, man, it didn't really feel like they missed him all that much. But, you know, I do think he is an important weapon for them as the playoffs, you know, become less and less teams and they get closer and closer to a Super Bowl. It feels like he is a really important part of their offense. And how much does it change for them when he's not playing?
I still think it's remarkable and amazing that Zay Flowers is the first Baltimore Ravens wide receiver ever to make the Pro Bowl. This is a team that came into existence
in
2000, 1990. Yes. They've never had a Pro Bowl wide receiver until this year, since moving from Cleveland. Remember, when Cleveland moved to Baltimore, they left all of their history in Cleveland. So Baltimore was treated as a franchise, as a expansion franchise by the league for records purposes. And Zay Flowers is the first ever wide receiver to make the Pro Bowl from the Baltimore Ravens. And he deserves it. He had 74 catches, over 1,000 yards. He is clearly their number one target. Then Rashad Bateman comes in after that, who, when you look at him, he's had a nice year, 45 catches, over 700 yards. But I think what happens is he becomes your focus, right? If you're in the passing game, at wide receiver at least, on the outside, mm-hmm. he becomes your focus if you're a defense. However, if you're a Ravens offense, I think that you have options. You know, the good thing, you know, if you're a Ravens fan and thinking, okay, Zay Flowers, missing him obviously is a blow, but okay, we have Isaiah Likely, and we know that this guy, he's a different type of player, but he's going to be on the field, and we're going to run a lot more two tight end sets, and good luck, because now we can also, you know, block you and also throw passes. So, but I think from the Bills' standpoint, if you don't have Zay Flowers, that might, guys, get us back to where we were before about dictating how often Taron Johnson's on the field or not, because now they may play more two tight end sets.
You know, and Sal, I'm wondering, too, it's like, I get how difficult this season their two tight end sets have been difficult, like how difficult it has been to defend them. But all the talk about how small the Bills linebackers are compared to, like, say, a Derrick Henry, you know, it was Dominic Foxworth, I think, that said, you know, on average, the Bills starting linebackers are 20 pounds less than Derrick Henry. But if maybe there's a disadvantage in the run game against Henry, it feels like they may have an advantage in the pass game in 12 personnel against their two very good tight ends.
Sure. I agree with that. I think the Bills this year have not really been hurt by tight ends a lot, right? I mean, in the years past, they have. You can go to a game here, a game there. I'm sure that's the case. I think, you know, for many years, Bulldog, you know this, for many years, we would talk about how tight ends killed the Bills, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it just was a thing. It always happened.
Ben Coates.
I think really, what's that?
Ben Coates.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. But really, the Bills have done a good job, I think, over the last several years of being able to, you know, mitigate that. And part of the reason is they are structured. I tell people this all the time. You know, we go on these shows all the time, and that's the one thing people say, like, well, boy, the Bills, you know, they're run and they're light. They're a light team, and how are they going to stop the run? I'm like, look, they know that, right? They're structured like that. Their philosophy is you're not going to throw the ball on us and beat us over the top. In a game like this, that's why it becomes a tougher matchup. That's why it's a in a lot of ways, a worse matchup against this team than so many other teams. With that being said, you know, they still have a lot of faith in the fact that they can get people to the football to make the tackles. It can't be a one-on-one with Derrick Henry all the time. And also, you're, you know, reducing the chance for those tight ends even to make plays down the field because you are a little bit more athletic. You do have more options in your zone or even man-to-man scheme to try and cover them.
How about the roster move today, Sal? Scout team quarterback?
Yeah, for sure. So Anthony Brown was re-signed to the Bills practice squad today. And he was on the Bills roster, if you guys remember, in camp / preseason this year. In camp, I can't remember when they let him go. I believe he was with the, what Bove told me, if I go back and look, he was with the Ravens actually maybe for like a week even around them. But really, I mean, you're not going to get much from, like, say, the offensive scheme because it's Todd Monken, who's their offensive coordinator. And last time he was there, it was in 2022. But he was with the Ravens. He does understand them. But the bigger picture here is he is absolutely going to be the quarterback the team uses in scout team to prepare the defense. I love Sean McDermott's answer on him today. You know, you don't get a ton from McDermott. You guys know that. But he really was insightful, and I appreciate it. And I'm going to read you what he said. He said, it's more than just, okay, Anthony Brown's here, he's going to act like Lamar Jackson. He said, there's a bigger picture. He said, if you just put a mobile person back there and you're planning on doing some scrambles and running around, the defense knows that. He knows that that's coming. You're not helping them. So in order to hide that, what Anthony brings is both. He can throw it and he can run it. So it's a true, honest look down in and down out. Anthony Brown is a quarterback. He's a mobile quarterback. He can run. He can run the read option. He's saying to you, McDermott's saying, when we prepare, our defense isn't going to know if it's a run or pass just because we have some guy who can run around back there. They're actually witnessing and defending a quarterback, which is what we're going to see. Now, of course, that happens, and there's many people that I've had, you know, tweet at me today or whatever, say, well, good luck. Nobody can simulate Lamar. Well, yeah, no duh, right? I mean, like, no kidding, right? Just like nobody can simulate Josh Allen. But that's what practice is for. Like, why even try then if you're not going to at least give the best look you can possibly get to prepare your people?
Yeah, I'm all about doing the best you can to try to simulate Lamar. I might be, maybe I'm trying too hard to just, you know, not go with the flow. But I'm more worried about him than I am Derrick Henry. I think Lamar's the MVP. I think all this talk about, you know, extra linebackers and all this stuff, like, I'm fine augmenting what they do. But when I hear from fans who, to me, it sounds like they want Sean McDermott to junk his entire philosophy because of three playoff games, I just think it ignores how good they've been against this team and lots of other teams for many seasons.
Yeah, hey, we may get to Sunday, and we may be making a lot of something they're not going to do. Maybe they don't run a lot of base, right? Maybe they just keep Taron Johnson on the field and say, let's go play football. They could do that as well. I will tell you this, though. I am the other way. I would be more concerned if you gave me and the Bills kind of do have this choice. I think you have to start with stopping Derrick Henry, because I think then at least you do make them one-dimensional if that's the case. Now, look, they do have Justice Hill, who can run the ball. If you just focus on Lamar Jackson, as great as he is, I think that gives them an ability to control the game with the run game. And to me, if the Ravens can control the game with the run game, I think that's a tough scenario for the Bills. If the Bills say you're not controlling this game on the ground with Lamar Jackson, at the very least, as great as Lamar is, and there's no doubt I'm not taking him away, at least if you know he has to drop back and throw the ball, then maybe something good can come of that from you, whether that's be a sack or an incompletion or an interception.
I would probably say the same thing about the Ravens, Sal, that I would think the Ravens' game plan will be, if we can take James Cook away, as good as Josh Allen is, if we can make them one-dimensional, we can tee off on their offensive linemen. Eric Wood talks about this all the time in terms of when the game plan shifts and you get behind, defensive linemen can tee off on your O-linemen because they know the threat of the run is not there. And I think I agree with that, and I think it'll be the same for the Ravens, Sal.
Yeah, I think so too. I think both teams want to, you know, run the ball. There's no doubt about it. They really want to run the ball. They want to establish the fact that they can let their quarterbacks have a little more freedom. I mean, listen, I know there's analytics that say this, but when you it's proven, but when you watch the Ravens, there's just guys open everywhere. Like, they have open people all the time. There's no one around them. And that's because teams are creeping up and they're trying to stop the run. And to your point, Bulldog, you're like, well, if you're going to stop Derrick Henry, guess what? Look what Lamar Jackson can do to you. And there's no doubt because he's throwing to these wide open guys. And I'm not taking anything away from him. Great. You know, and he's hitting them and he deserves it. But yeah, that's the conundrum you're in. And the same thing can be said on the other side of the ball. If you are going to just say, we're just going to stop James Cook, well, guess what? Josh Allen, you know, you can he can do a lot of things. However, if the Bills can't run the ball and they're struggling to do it and you just put the ball in Josh Allen's hands and say you have to go win the game with your arm, then that's going to play into a lot of what the Ravens want to do. There's no doubt. Did you guys also see the quotes from Lamar about the cold in this game?
I have not. Fill us in, please. Yeah, please, if you know.
Yeah, so he was asked, Lamar Jackson was, about playing in the cold. And they said, are you going to wear gloves? And he said, nah. He said, I tried it once. It's terrible. And then he said, I want to get the quote from you here. Hold on. I think
was
he
it
said,
Teddy Two Gloves that I see? I'll leave that
for Teddy Two Gloves.
Yeah, I'll save it for Teddy Two Gloves. Yeah.
But he said, no. He said, I tried it and it was terrible.
All right.
I said, no matter how cold it's going to get, I will not. I'm not putting a glove on my throwing hand.
There was a recent game in Baltimore that was like 50 degrees at kickoff, and he looked like he was freezing. He wears that headgear thing all the time. It just must be a comfort thing. But and plus he's sick a lot. It seems like right during the season, like he's missed practice. But I feel like he looks cold always. So I don't expect him looking cold to be a thing. Because to me, he looks cold when it's 50 degrees out.
Yeah, looking cold, that's right. I do wonder, though. Listen, I mean, maybe it's just a little, you know, hopeful optimism here because we know it's like, you know, here in Buffalo. But I do want to see, you know, that how he performs in the cold and how that changes because I do think it can matter. We know Josh Allen can do it. We've seen him. He's one of the greatest performers ever in this kind of weather. But I don't think we've really seen Lamar Jackson throw the ball in that condition. I don't think it's going to be windy, but maybe a little bit. But with the cold, it's certainly something that is on people's minds. It becomes mental, too, as you guys know.
Right. Low teens, they're talking by kickoff.
Eight. Is what I saw.
8 to 10 degrees, I believe, by kickoff, yeah. In the single digits during the game.
Maybe I want to revisit. He won't look cold, or I won't think he looks cold. Maybe he will look cold.
I will be cold in the booth. So, and poor Sal will also be very cold on the field.
That's
so.
All right.
I bundle up. I got heaters.
You know
down
how
there,
to
I'm
layer
good,
it
guys.
Up, and the no if it's not windy, that's all
that's
you
huge.
Need.
Yeah,
that's all
huge.
You need, man. All right, well, Sal, I don't know, one day closer. All new questions tomorrow.
All right, we'll try and answer them the proper way. Right,
that's our Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? This is a very weird thing for me to be saying at 4:28 p.m. on a Wednesday, but last call for calls because the Sabres play at 6, which means Steve Foley Law pregame begins at 5, which means we've got a half an hour to hang out with Nate and myself and you all. So fire them up, 803-0550. Really, anything goes, man. We're talking Bills and Ravens in the divisional round. 803-0550 is the number. Nate is in for Mike. I am the Bulldog. Thanks for listening to WGR.
I have been invited to be the legend of the game.
Let's
I have
go.
Been invited to come out. You saw Kyle Williams do it last week.
The magic
week,
is coming back to Buffalo,
and
baby.
It was so amazing.
Any pregame speeches like Kyle Williams' video? I saw the Kyle Williams video.
Kyle gave a little pregame speech.
He did.
You know what I think? I think with me more than words, the fans are expecting some skin. You know,
yes,
they're expecting some chest hair. They're expecting some back hair. I got to give the people what they want. What do I have to lay off to look skinnier? Carbs? Should I get a spray tan?
Spray tan.
Yeah, get the spray tan.
Good luck getting through all that hair.
He's
a furry man.
He is.
Fits. Yeah.
The back hair comments, what? Yeah.
Yeah. I like his chances to go full David Ortiz after the marathon bombings. If anyone is ever going to grab the mic at one of those things and throw an F-bomb in there.
It's going to be Fitz.
It's going to be Fitz.
Yeah.
I want plus 10,000 on him swearing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not telling you it's going to happen, but if it were ever going to, that's your dude.
He's the guy that's going to do it.
Yeah.
Kyle Williams, definitely not.
Come on, Buffalo, let's go.
Yep.
Come on, you can hear Fitz doing that.
Yeah.
With no shirt on.
Yeah.
And the place absolutely going insane.
He's going to do the, you know, like for the Patriots game, he did like the ripped off the shirt and was like,
Hulk type.
Yeah, he's going to go full Hulk, I would guess.
Yeah, well, that'll be cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to being there.
803-0550 is the number here. Nate Geary sitting in for Mike Shope today. I am the Bulldog. Sabres pregame coming your way. Don't adjust your sets at 5. The Steve Foley Law pregame. Sabres and Hurricanes play tonight at 6. I don't know. I just work here. Steven is up first this segment. Hi, Steven. Thanks for calling. You're on WGR.
Hey, good Wednesday afternoon. Well, we got 4 days to go, so here's what I see as the key for the Bills winning this game on Sunday. You look at the game they just played against the Broncos, you look at the time of possession, and that tells the story. So what the defense has to do, they've got to step up. They've got to be able to keep the Ravens' offense off the field, and they've got to do it at a higher level. And, of course, we don't want them having the Ravens coming out and scoring immediately like the Broncos did, because we're talking a whole different level of things with the Ravens as the opponent. But what mm-hmm. I'm saying is that I have total confidence if we can keep the Bills' offense on the field, they're going to score a lot of points. Josh and all the, you know, various players with the offense. So, you know, I was listening to the interview that they did on One Bills Live with Dan Orlovsky earlier in the week, and he mentioned how in the Pittsburgh Steelers game that the Ravens just played against where they had 6 offensive linemen, and he said they're 300 pounds.
Yeah. I was listening to this segment too.
Yeah, so the Bills defense, you know, Ed Oliver, Von Miller, and, of course, it's great to see, and this is the other thing, this is a totally different Bills team from week 4 because we've got the trio, Milano and Johnson and Bernard are back. And Milano, I mean, he looked phenomenal in that game this past Sunday. He's back. Mm-hmm. So if they can play at that kind of level and put pressure on on Jackson and find a way to stop King Henry, this team is definitely going to win this game. And I'm going to make a prediction. I think the Bills are going to continue their 30-plus points per game with this game. And I'm going to predict 34-24. I think the Buffalo Bills are capable, and I'm not taking lightly the Ravens by any means, but the Bills, if the defense steps up, they're definitely capable of doing that.
All right, Steven, thank you. Appreciate it. How many stops will be good? Like, what are we talking about here? 3, 4 possessions, a half, 10, 12 possessions a game? What's a good number? 12? Let's say 12. Is that too many?
Yes.
Okay, 10?
Yeah.
The Bronco game was weird. The Bills only had 3.
I bet you it'll probably be more like between 8 and 10.
8 and 10. Okay, yeah. So it's 8 to 10 possessions each. Jesus, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Now I want to just practice saying possessions. What's good? 2 stops? 3 stops? Like, how many stops would
it
you take?
It depends how you feel the offense is. Well, how many are they getting stopped?
That's what I'm getting at here, because all the focus, of course. Well, are we going to match up Derrick Henry? Linebackers instead of cornerbacks, yada, yada, yada. Can't get running. Got to get him off the field. Look, man, the Ravens are excellent. The Bills are excellent. The Ravens are going to have a hard time, I think, stopping the Bills, too. So, points. It's going to be points. So, how many stops? I think if it's an 8 to 10 possession game and I force you to punt twice, I think I've had a good day. Now, an advantage the Bills have enjoyed all year is they've gotten turnovers, and like those are even better because you don't have to wait for them to kick you the ball. You're getting it wherever the turnover happens. So they get 2 stops and a turnover. Yeah, I'm not assuming all point, like, you know, field goals maybe in here.
Field goals to me are stops.
Okay.
Against the Ravens, field goals are stops.
All right. So I just don't – I think the Bills are going to need to score 35 points. Right? I mean, they do a good job on Derrick Henry. I think they're going to need to score 35 points.
Yes.
Right?
I would agree.
Like that's.
And I do think that it likely comes down to who has the ball last. could very much be who wins.
Right.
I also don't know that I'm like some sort of like I'm like recreating the wheel when I say something like that.
No,
but
sure.
I think, listen, you know, I told you that when I walked in that my fear has been that the Ravens could absolutely boat race the Bills or the Bills will win a close game. I don't really see a scenario where the Bills are going to blow out the Ravens. If the Bills win, it will be because they forced the Ravens to kick field goals. And I am not under the impression that either of these teams are going to attempt a lot of field goals in this game. If it's 4th and 4, I think both these teams are going for it. If it's 4th and 4 on their own 40, I think both teams are going for it.
8 degrees. Those are tough kicking conditions,
I think, even if
it's not that windy.
On two kickers that have struggled more than any two kickers that are good kickers in the league this year.
I love that. There's a lot in there.
Like
struggle
first of all,
more than any kickers who are good kickers.
I think I saw that Tyler Bass was 1st in field goal accuracy in 50 plus yards and 30th in 30 or less.
Oof. That's tough.
That's weird.
Yeah, that is weird. So maybe they should kick the long ones and kick the short ones.
If this game does come down to a field goal, oh man, is that going to be something? If what is considered the best kicker ever in Justin Tucker, who is having his worst season by far, if it comes down to a 50-plus yard field goal to win the game, poetry is what that would be.
Let's get Steve in before we hit another commercial break. Steve, hi. Thanks for calling. You're on WGR.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I agree with most of what you guys are saying. I personally think that this next game, the next two games, God willing, the next three games, are really going to come down to McDermott. And I kind of look at it like you guys both play golf. Like, you got a 3-foot putt on the first hole. That's pretty easy, pretty routine. Like, people know how to make those putts, and you don't have to prepare too much for it. You're not overthinking it at that point. But you get to the 18th green, and you got the same putt, but you're not the putt for, you know, your personal best score. Suddenly, that putt, your knees start knocking. And I think that's where McDermott has sort of struggled in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally just hope that, you know, we've seen growth from him this year. I hope that this year is different, that he's able to handle that pressure. And I personally think that will be the difference going into the game. So
I hope you're right, Steve. We talked a little bit about this earlier. Thank you for the call, and I appreciate being referred to as both. You are both golfers with Nate in the room. 3 years ago, I would have objected vigorously to that, but nah, I'm all right now. We talked earlier about McDermott learning how to deal with the pressure himself, so that he can capably lead a team full of dudes through the pressure, and that. You know, that I think can be a learning process in and of itself. And hopefully the scars he's earned over the years here, last year, you know, in the regular season, as well as all these other playoff moments, have helped prepare him to be more ready. I hope that's right. I mean, I certainly do, because I think a lot rides on it. And I think, kind of by far, he's facing the most pressure of any person involved in this game because of the unique capabilities of Baltimore on offense and this idea about sort of augmenting schematically what you do, linebacker instead of Taron Johnson, etc. Like, McDermott is squarely just in the middle of all of this here. And whatever he does, better work, because if it doesn't, there could be big trouble. I mean, it could not work, and they could just outscore Baltimore. You know, that would be great too, I suppose. But either way, he's got a big job in front of him here. Biggest of his career, I think, with just how everything has come together here, where he's at, where they're at, where Allen's at, this opponent. It's a massive game for McDermott, I think.
It's a massive game for McDermott, and, you know, I think part of it, too, is the narrative machine. And I'm not sure how much he listens, but, you know, that's what most people, I think, that are thinking about and talking about this game, they're looking at him as the guy with the most pressure. And again, I don't think he's the guy that runs away from that, but I'm also not sure how aware he is of just how much people do believe the pressure is on him.
Yeah, we'll hit a timeout here. Sabres pregame coming your way in about 20 minutes with Paul Hamilton live from KeyBank Center. Sabres and Hurricanes facing off at the weird hour of 6.07 p.m. I'm not really sure why that happened, but we've got pregame coming up at 5 here on WGR. Thanks for hanging out with us today here. Nate Geary's been in for Mike Shope today. I am the Bulldog. Sabres pregame, Steve Foley Law pregame, coming your way at the top of the hour. Paul Hamilton will join me then for this oddly timed Sabres. It's only an hour different, but this is odd. I thought when I saw this on the schedule a few weeks ago, because I look ahead, think what's coming when kind of thing. I thought 6 p.m., I thought, oh, it's one of these nights in the league where everybody's playing.
Everybody plays.
And the games are starting at 4:30 or something, and there's just a game every half hour. No. Two games in the league tonight.
Instead.
And 6 and 8:30, and I don't know. I can't fathom why TNT wanted to maybe just try it out. I don't know.
I think it probably is something along the lines of, well, if we start them at 6, people will tune in at 7, and there'll be an hour less of Sabres hockey in primetime.
Yeah, I don't think that's it.
Not me either. I tried to take a stab.
I appreciate you.
Thank you.
How curious are you about the coaching cycle and like what's happening here? And like you mentioned during a break here, Aaron Glenn and the Jets, that might be really good for them.
They also really like Brian Flores, apparently. So I think both would be fine. I think Glenn is a better choice. I think that's who Glenn wants to go to, is the Jets for some reason.
The Raiders maybe being able to get Ben Johnson into the boat would be pretty
crazy
incredible.
Good. Yeah. But they still don't have a quarterback though.
Right. That's what makes it incredible that they could get him. Like I wonder if they have a plan. Are they presenting? We're gonna go get Kirk Cousins or something.
They've gone through 4 head coaches in 4 years.
Well, McDaniel. How long was McDaniel there?
A year and a half.
Second time.
He was there a year and a half.
Right. There was an interim before him. Probably.
The
Bisaccia.
Guy. Bisaccia. Yeah. Right. Yes. Then they hired.
McDaniels replaced him, then Antonio Pierce replaced him, and
yes.
Now
Antonio Pierce being replaced. Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Tough times. Yeah. It would blow my mind if they got like the hottest coordinator in the game
to go there.
But that's Brady, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
Mark Davis with that haircut is getting Ben Johnson to come to Vegas with Gardner Minshew as his quarterback. Come on, it's got to be Brady.
Yeah, it's got to be. It just is crazy that he has sway when he can't even be in the facility, really.
Or he's not. Yeah, right. Did you mention or did Zach mention?
Yeah, it was like
he was talking to Ben Johnson at the game on Sunday.
And there's a little bit of talk right now that the league might be investigating.
No, he wouldn't have been. He wouldn't have seen Ben Johnson on Sunday. It was early in the year then, because the Lions didn't play last weekend.
Or yeah, it was like 2 weeks ago.
Two weeks ago. Okay.
The last week of the year, I think.
Right. Okay.
I think it was the Minnesota game.
Okay.
He would have been doing for Fox.
That game was Sunday night.
So it wasn't that one.
Anyway, whatever.
Regardless, there was a video of them
There's a dude working in the booth that is
also
a part
an owner of
a
team
which
feels
stupid. But
also, did you see Deontay Johnson got claimed off of waivers by the Ravens?
No, I did not.
Yeah,
really?
But he's not eligible to play at all for the rest of the season. He won't be able to join a team until next year. Feels like, I don't know. It's a weird thing. I don't think anyone was claiming him.
We are soon enough going to have video. My face just now, while you like just tell me, I'm like a dog looking at a spaceship.
There's the good Simpsons meme of Mo kicking the guy out of the bar and then going like this, right. And then Deontay Johnson just behind him again.
What in the world? Yeah. That's a weird one.
It is.
That is a weird one. Well, Zay Flowers wasn't around for practice, as far as we know, today.
Looking less and
That's
less
not
likely
a surprise.
Yeah.
I think the way John Harbaugh sounded about it early in the week was, like, I think he even said, even if he doesn't practice, he could still play. Like, he doesn't need to practice one of these days so that he can play on Sunday. So they're going to ride this right up to the end. But I would right now, not just because he missed today. Obviously, if he had taken part today, that might be encouraging. But I would bet on him not playing. Flowers.
I would also agree with
it
that.
It seemed like a multi-week injury. So that could be really big. I mean, Bateman's been maybe kind of had a bit of a turnaround season, I guess, right? But beyond that, what are we into? Aguilar? I mean, I know the tight ends are good, so I got to worry about them.
Aguilar.
They might just always have big people on the field the whole game.
Yep.
Almost out of necessity. Like, without Flowers, they might just go, well, let's get another tight end out there and see what happens. Both of their tight ends, their two main tight ends are excellent.
Patrick Ricard's very good, too. They're fullback. There's going to be a lot of big guys out there.
Right. Yeah. We had a caller reference Dan Orlovsky yesterday on One Bills Live talking about them doing what the Bills do a lot with Alec Anderson, a sixth offensive lineman plus Ricard.
it's a lot of beef.
2,100 pounds plus total, like 7 300-pound dudes is pretty epic. All right. Well, I've kept you long enough. We got to find a way to get like 2-hour versions of these shows because this has been.
Good luck with that, by the way. Yeah, good luck. Good luck with that. Good luck on that sale, that pitch.
Anyway, good to see you. I'm glad you got. And I hope we helped you in some way.
Yes, you did.
Because you definitely helped us.
Well,
No, you didn't really at all.
No,
all right,
not at all.
Nate's going to go. I'm going to handle Sabres pregame. Paul Hamilton is on the way right after this as we get you ready for the Sabres and the Hurricanes here on WGR.